sprinkle kelp over my steamed veggies. Pour Dr. Bronner's on my greens. I like wheat germ with my cereal. I like brown rice with my beans. So if you like my honey style, you can take me off the shelf.
Hello, and thank you for joining me today. I am Mindy McNeil, and I am joined in studio with Sarah Brito. She is with the Good Food Media Network, the Good Food 100 Restaurants. And it's just a pleasure to have you in studio today, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. You know, how I came across you and your organization, you had an industry night a few weeks ago and at the Source Hotel. And the thing that I loved about it was talking about just a variety of different things, but it really focused on the Good Food, the 100 list, some of the good restaurants. I mean, you know, there was 626 on Rude, Black Belly, 1515 restaurant, a Fruition restaurant that are part of this Good Food 100. And, you know, I've heard terms such as root to tip, farm to table, different things like that. And you had a gentleman there, Steve Howell. He was the Hog Farmer of the Year. He came in from Iowa, was it?
Yes.
He was selected as Hog Farmer of the Year. So he read this letter during, you know, his speech. And I thought to myself, this is interesting because we forget so much about farms. We forget, you know, we're just interested in our food and we just want to eat it, but we don't think about where it comes from, you know. And one of the things I was thinking about, what qualifies your, you know, a restaurant to be part of the Good Food 100?
Well, it's interesting because we believe that good food is about more than just taste. And I think you're exactly right, is that as a culture, we've been so mesmerized by chefs, food TV, and sort of the pomp and circumstance around food and our infatuation with the taste of what's on our plate, that we often forget that taste is just the beginning of the story. Okay. And so we define good food as being good for every link in the food chain, that we really have to challenge and expand the conversation beyond taste to include the environment, the animals, the farmers and ranchers and fishermen that are raising or catching that food, the purveyors that bring that food to market, the restaurants and the restaurant workers that prepare and cook and serve that food, and then ultimately us, the eaters. But good food is about so much more than just taste. I really believe that taste should just open the conversation.
The conversation starter, basically. Yeah.
Yes.
1550 restaurant, they said being a green, sustainable restaurant. So are those things that you all are looking for when you're looking for to add a restaurant in as well? I know you just mentioned some other things.
Sure. So the way the Good Food 100 restaurants works is restaurants actually apply to be on our list.
Okay.
So it's the first recognition in the culinary and restaurant industry that I'm aware of that requires restaurants to apply. So they have to be willing to, first of all, put in the work to fill out our very rigorous application. But their rating, once they're on our list, and any U.S. restaurant is eligible to apply to be on our list. But once they're on our list, their rating is based on how much of their food budget they're allocating towards good food producers and purveyors. And so we provide some minimum threshold definitions for each of the six food categories that we track. So, for instance, in meat, our minimum threshold definition is no subtherapeutic use of antibiotics or hormones and no cages or confinement. So as long as the chefs and restaurants, which can also include very large food service organizations like the Boulder Valley School District is on our list, okay, and CU Boulder applied to be on our list, as long as they're meeting those minimum thresholds, that classifies as good food. And then we compare what percentage of their budget they're allocating towards good food to others in the industry, and we assign them a rating between 2 to 6 links. And those links really represent links in the food chain, as I was describing earlier, the environment, animals, farmers, et cetera.
Okay, because I did see some of those links when I was at your website. So I was like, okay, because one of them had a 5 rating, you know, 5 links, and I was like, oh my gosh, this must be, you know, I'm thinking like hotels, or, you know, or gourmet eating or different things. I do have a question, though. You mentioned the term subtherapeutic. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Yes, it's kind of a complicated term, and it's a complicated issue in meat production. And I'm no expert on it, so I'll try to put this into layman's terms, which is it's basically giving antibiotics to animals in their feed almost as a preventative measure because of the horrible factory-like conditions in which those animals are raised. And so therefore they're predisposed to all sorts of health issues. So we're okay with giving animals antibiotics when they need them, just like we as humans should only be taking them when we absolutely need them. We would never want to be knowingly eating antibiotics in our food. And so the subtherapeutic use is, it's exactly that. It's like not for therapeutic use. It's sort of like underneath therapeutic use. It's like just in the feed supply.
Okay.
I'd encourage your listeners to Google, because it has major ramifications for human public health. Because if the animals are eating antibiotics and then we proceed to eat that meat, yes, then we are unknowingly eating antibiotics as well.
And I think that's good. It follows what goes into your food. And I think that we are in such a state right now in society, we want to know, you know, what we're eating, what's going on, not just take the slop, so to speak, as, you know, from before.
Absolutely. I mean, the latest data that I've seen is that 90% or more of American consumers want to know what's in their food. Also, 90% or more believe it is their right to know what's in their food. People want to know, and I think the pressure is on these restaurants, and I think why chefs and restaurants are applying. 125 restaurants across the country and 44 restaurants here in Colorado applied to be on our 2018 list. I think that they're doing that because they understand that their consumers, their eaters, want transparency. They want to know where their food is coming from.
When I was looking at your website, part of your mission is to educate and inspire eaters by cultivating a conversation and community around the people and businesses changing the system, the food system for good. So a couple things out of that. What does it mean to educate and inspire eaters?
I'm glad you asked that, because having been involved in the good food movement for almost 20 years now, and working with other advocates, you know, and this goes to other issues as well, hunger, politics, that we often believe that if consumers just knew, if we just educated consumers, they would change their behavior. And I like to challenge that, because my background is in branding and marketing, including for some big fast food companies. There's two reasons I bring that up. One, I should say that means that if I used to market big bad food, that anyone can join the good food movement at any time. this is not and should not be a righteous food movement. But the second reason is when you think about fast food marketing, fast food, we all know that fast industrial processed food is not good for us.
Yeah.
But if you look at these sales of that, you know, fast industrial processed food, there are very big numbers. And so it's not just about educating consumers. People know it's not good for them, and yet they continue to buy it, because those food companies are very good at inspiring eaters to want more. And so I think that we can't just educate eaters to change behavior. We have to inspire them to want to be a part of something that is much better for them. So it's really about stimulating desire and not just trying to convince them that good food is good for them, but creating the desire to want to be a part of the good food movement by buying and eating good food.
So that desire, is it maybe spurred on by knowledge or just, I don't know, because we're talking about taste and food and, you know, people. I was talking with someone a few weeks ago, and, you know, whenever you go to someone's house for a party, where is everybody at? It seems like the majority of the people are in the kitchen or in the dining room, because food just seems to be what we gravitate towards. You know, Thanksgiving's, you know, already passed, so what did everybody want to do? They wanted to get around their turkey or, you know, their mashed potatoes or whatever, because that's, I feel like food is what kind of drives us, so to speak?
Absolutely. I mean, I believe in the saying, we are what we eat. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what happens is that obviously we live in very challenging times as society. And I think, you know, sometimes people don't think about what they're eating. When you're working, you know, multiple jobs, when you're have long commutes, when you're trying to raise kids, you're not always thinking through the implications. You're hungry. It's, you know, you've got maybe kids in the backseat of the car who are coming from music lessons or soccer practice, and they want food on the table. And so you put food on the table. But I think if we can inspire people to think about, you know, what you're eating has implications on climate change. It has implications on the environment. Here we are in Colorado. We live in a beautiful natural environment where many of us like to do outdoor activities. Well, have you thought about how what you're eating is having an implication on that? When you think about the human impact, I've recently learned statistics that said that since 1950, we've lost over 200 million acres in agricultural land. That translates to we've lost 3.5 million farms, individual farms, since 1950. That's 52 farms per day that we're losing. If we thought about the implications to that, you know, that means that we are losing people in our communities that have a stake in the sustainability of the community. And so I think we have to inspire people to think about the people involved, the animals. None of us would probably knowingly choose to abuse an animal. But when you are eating chicken that you are not thinking about whether it's coming from a good food producer. When you are eating a burger and you're not thinking about if where it's coming from, you are unknowingly, unconsciously contributing to some of the most horrific animal abuse that if it was in your face, you would never choose to vote for. So I think we have to be more conscious to vote with our forks and vote with our dollars every time we eat.
You know, and I like that vote with our forks, you know, because our dollar, where I put my money, says a lot, you know. And I think about just like myself, because there are sometimes I like to fast sometimes as a person just to clean out my system or whatever. But then I notice when I eat certain foods, like I can run to fast food chain and get something real quick, and then I just feel miserable, you know. But then there's other times when, you know, if I think about what I pick up at my grocery store or something like that and I make it myself, there's just this difference. I feel like I have more energy and I can do more things. And Good Fruition Restaurant had made a comment. They said, good food means knowing and caring about where your food comes from and how your choices in sourcing impact the environment, culture, guests, and end result on the plate. You know, and I think about that because we don't think about where it comes from. We just want to know that it's on the plate and it's ready to go. You know, and I hear this, and I'm like, wow, there's so many. You said there's six links?
There are six links. So restaurants are rated on the percentage of their food budget allocated towards good food. The highest rating is six links, and 27 Colorado restaurants achieve the highest rating. So that's 27 of the 44 Colorado restaurants achieve the highest rating. And even the lowest rating of two means that you are still working hard at being transparent with your food purchasing practices and trying to shift more of your food budget into the good food economy. And this is having a major effect in Colorado. I just would love to share some dollar figures, which is that these Colorado chefs spent $25.3 million on good food in 2017. So this is based on their 2017 food purchases. The list comes out the following year.
Okay.
And that $25.3 million actually contributed to a $49.9 million economic impact here in the state of Colorado alone. And so when you do the simple math, that means that for every dollar that a chef allocates towards the good food economy or towards a good food producer, it's having a $2 economic impact. And so I just like to take it down to that simple dollar level that each of us as consumers can relate to. When you're in the grocery store next, or you're buying food, or you're at the farmer's market, and you know that every dollar you're spending could have a $2 or twice the economic impact, which food system do you want to perpetuate? I think it's our choice. It's as simple as that. Which food system do you want to have twice the economic impact? The big factory industrial system that is not good for any link in the food system? Or the good food economy that is trying to be good, to honor and to respect every link in the food system?
Wow. Now, you had mentioned, we were talking earlier, and you had said that there is a process. So I am Mindy's Meals, okay? And I want to be part of the Good Food 100. And there's a lengthy application process. How do you vet us? You know, what's the process, I guess, basically?
Sure. So the 2019 application period will open in early to mid-January. And the application will be open for about 5 months through the end of May. And the application primarily focuses on your purchasing. So it's kind of, I like to use the analogy of your getting ready to do your taxes.
Okay.
If you're really organized throughout the year, then doing your taxes isn't super hard. Yeah. But if you've got all your receipts in a shoebox, it's going to take you a long time. And so the majority of the application focuses on asking you for your spend amounts and who you were buying from and how much you were spending with each of your purveyors from last year. So Mindy's Meals would have to know who they were buying from and how much that they spent. And in addition to that, there are some additional questions about your other sustainably minded business practices. We ask the restaurants, do you compost? Do you try to buy eco-friendly cleaning supplies? Do you partner with other businesses that are eco-minded, like for your laundry services that might be like providing you your napkins and your linens and things like that? So there are a number of other questions about other sustainably minded facets of running a restaurant business, including labor information questions. Are you providing health care to your employees? Do you provide vacation to your employees? At what point do you start paying overtime? After 8 hours per day or after 40 hours per week? So we're really trying to understand other facets of the business and really just promote a culture of transparency in the restaurant industry, which has really, the restaurant industry's roots are in secrecy. If you think about it, if I came to Mindy's Meals for dinner and I asked you, I said, wow, this is delicious. You know, what's it in it or where's it from? Your response might have been, oh, it's my secret recipe. Yeah. It's my secret sauce. And so that notion of secrecy is really part of the DNA of what has up until this point contributed to the definition of good food.
Okay.
And we're trying to challenge that notion that the restaurant industry should not be grounded in secrecy. In 2018, given where we are as a culture, I truly believe it is our right to know where our food is coming from. Eaters want to know where their food is coming from, and restaurants have a responsibility to be transparent with their purchasing practices.
Now, like I said, we did speak about Steve Howe earlier. He was the Hog Farmer of the Year. But I think off mic, maybe you and I talked about Clint and Mary Kay. Is it Buck or Buckner?
Buckner.
Buckner, yes. Okay. So they received an award. What was that award for?
Yes, so for in Colorado, since Colorado dominated the 2018 Good Food 100 Restaurants list, the Colorado restaurants represented 35% of the participants.
Wow.
We decided to create two inaugural awards to allow the chefs and restaurants to vote on who they believed was the Colorado Producer of the Year and the Colorado Purveyor or Distributor of the Year. And the awards were designed to recognize these businesses who have really been doing a lot to promote sustainability, to promote advocacy, and to really drive the notion of good food in the state of Colorado. And so Clint and Mary Kay Buckner of Buckner Family Farm in Boulder County, known as Lamb Producers, since Colorado is known for its lamb, won Producer of the Year, and really innovative business in Hotchkiss, Colorado, Farm Runners, which functions as a distributor to make sure that good food can get to the food businesses in the mountain towns. Mm. So to really work with producers on the western slope and get good food to Telluride, to Crested Butte, to Grand Junction, one Purveyor of the Year. So we're really excited to honor the producers and the purveyors behind good food, because there is no good food. As much as we love chefs and I love chefs and I love restaurants. There is no good food without farmers, ranchers, fishermen, and the purveyors to bring that food to all of us.
Okay, so Sarah, you know, there is the good food, 100 restaurants, you know, but why do you honor the producers and the purveyors? I think I'm kind of a little confused about that. Could you clear that,
sure,
that for me?
Sure. Absolutely right. You know, for the majority of the year, we're focused on celebrating the chefs and restaurants mm-hmm. that are cooking and serving good food. I think it's important for all of us to remember that there is no good food without good farmers, ranchers, mm-hmm. fishermen, and purveyors to bring that food to market. And so it's appropriate, you know, having just celebrated Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. that we remember that farmers and distributors are critical links in the food system and that we, you know, don't have good food without them.
Now, if somebody's listening, they want to find out more about the Good Food 100 list, what's a good website address for them to go to?
They can learn more about us at goodfood100restaurants.org or follow us on social media. Our tag or our name on social media is at Good Food 100 List.
Well, Sarah, I thank you so much for your time. Thank you for stopping by and educating myself and our listeners as well.
Thank you so much for caring about good food. I think it's so critical that we not think of caring as elitist. Everyone has a right to care, and no one should be penalized for caring about where their food is coming from. So thank you so much for having me.
I sprinkle kelp over my steamed veggies, pour Dr. Bronner's on my greens. I like wheat germ with my cereal, I like brown rice with my beans. So if you like my honey style, you can take me off the shelf. Let's do the health thing, baby, 'cause I'm a health food nut myself. I'm pumping iron and potassium, I'm a health food nut myself.